good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. I'm John Morgo alongside Leon Brown. Daniel Bolton has not joined us as of yet. He will be calling in a matter of moments. And we hope that he does join us in between our conversation, because right now we're being joined by Kyle Sandy, who is pretty much the go-to information guy for everything in terms of Georgia high school prep basketball. They just converged down in Macon, and they crowned all winners in 16 different classifications, a smorgasbord of hoops going down there over 4 days at the Macon Centerplex. And Kyle has graciously deigned to join us to kind of distill everything that went on. Kyle, how are you today?
I am doing well. It's good to hear from you guys. I know, like you just prefaced, it's been a long weekend of basketball, and it's all come to a head. So it was a good way to wrap up another great fun season of GHSA basketball.
Let's start with the big game, as Daniel Bolton is calling in right now. So I'm gonna give me a moment to just kind of get everything together as I merge the calls from Daniel. Okay, Daniel is merged in. Daniel, we're on the air right now. We're talking with Kyle Sandy of Sandy Spiel, the go-to man for everything Georgia high school basketball, talking about the weekend at the Centroplex. I haven't gotten to my first question, but I'm about to do that right now. The big game at the end was Wheeler with that one-point victory over Grayson. Grayson, the number two team in the nation, I believe, got taken out by Wheeler, which came in as a fourth seed. And, Kyle, from what I read on that game, it was the big thing came with a foul call with about a second left. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, so Wheeler, they came out hot. They had a good lead early on. They led the entire game up until the pretty much the final possession of the third quarter, when Grayson finally took a lead. But Grayson went on a 23-4 run. They were up 8 points. It looked like Wheeler was in deep trouble, but Wheeler answered back with a 7-0 run, and then, back and forth they go. Wheeler held a 3-point lead with, about 15 seconds to play. Grayson raced the ball down the floor. Davon Smith, who's going to Mississippi State, got into the lane, kicked it out to Tenari Lane for a three, who buried it in the corner. So, pandemonium's going on. It's 59-59 with, less than 10 seconds to go now. And we're thinking, okay, this could potentially be overtime. Larry Thompson does not call a timeout. He trusts his Wildcats. They go down the floor. I believe it was Nash Kelly who tried a layup attempt. Was off the rim, but it was Sam Hines who's going to Denver. Flew in for the offensive rebound and then got fouled. Wow. 1.1 seconds left, and then he hit the first free throw, so they went ahead 60-59, and then he tried to miss the second free throw on purpose, but they ruled that the ball did not hit the rim, so it ended up being a break for Grayson. Right. So Grayson had an opportunity to inbound the ball from underneath their own basket, had to go the length of the floor. They threw it to Caleb Murphy, who took about one dribble, heaved it from about three-quarters court, hit the backboard, did not go in the basket, obviously, and there you have it, 60-59, Wheeler shocks the nation.
Well, Wheeler and Grayson played once before at the Wheeler Tournament of Champions back in December. I called that game for SUV-TV, and from what I remember of that one, Grayson just kind of owned the second and fourth quarters. They outscored Wheeler, I think, 24-10 in the second, and then did it again in the fourth in a five-point victory, 73-68 in that one. I'm sure that was on Wheeler's mind during that game. Was there anything, do you think, that they learned from that first matchup with Grayson that they possibly put into the rematch?
I would think the biggest thing is that they knew that they could play with Grayson. I mean, Grayson is so intimidating with, beating Norcross by 38 points in the postseason and just steamrolling the competition all throughout the year, and they were ranked nationally, top five for good reason. But Wheeler, they played them really tight, and Wheeler had Grayson down in the fourth quarter. Grayson had to rally to win that first matchup. So, Coach Thompson, they just didn't execute down the stretch, just couldn't close them out a couple months ago. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Had all this good momentum. They were just about to close them out, but they got a second crack at them here in Macon, and they were able to get the job done. So just that first game of knowing what they were going against, not being able to see Grayson earlier in the season, learn from a couple miscues, you know, maybe a couple stops that didn't get down the stretch. They're able to use that, and they put it into play, and they really just rode us. Sam Hunt was just incredible with 28 points.
Hey, Kyle, this is Leon. Speaking of stops, after seeing so much consistent offensive output between the first three quarters between Grayson and Wheeler, I mean, was there like some type of difference? I mean, some type of wrench of adjustment that went on as far as defensive schemes on both coaches' behalves for the fourth quarter?
Grayson, in the first half is where Grayson really struggled, because I thought sometimes when you have so much talent, they can play isolation basketball, and that kind of hurt them. Now, Grayson's at their best when they're able to get into the lane and drive and kick with Davon Smith and really make some plays that way. But Wheeler was really fundamentally sound, some man-to-man, some zone mixed in there at times. They were just really good and, you know, closed off lanes, and offensively they hit the glass. And I'm talking to Joffrey Pierce after the game for Grayson. He kind of did a little bit regret not running as many double teams at Sam Hines as he could have. I mean, Hines was 11 of 12 from the field, and he was nearly perfect. But he was just like, you know, you think this guy's got to miss eventually, but Hines was just, you know, getting to the basket, rebounds, you know, short mid-range shots and everything. Probably could have ran a couple double teams to get the ball out of his hands, but Hines was just on another planet, and Grayson, even with their size inside, they just could not find a way to slow him down.
I want to bring Daniel Bolton in on this. Daniel, you were at Macon for some of the festivities, weren't you?
I was there for the final game.
Right.
Yeah, and
do you have any observations?
In the final game of the Westlake.
Yeah,
I do.
All right, I want to talk about that Westlake Collins Hill girls game as well. But you know, since you were there, do you have any observations that you can share?
I do. And Kyle, you can jump in on this one. And I'm going to ask you about Westlake in just a second. But the game, the Wheeler-Grayson game, which you're touching on, there was a point in that game, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was either Caleb Murphy or Davion Smith. I think it was Caleb Murphy. There was a monster dunk that one of those guys did, and it was an and-one situation. And me and my buddy are sitting there watching the game, and we're saying, wow, Wheeler really got punched in the mouth. Did you think that at that point in time, because I believe Grayson was up 54-46 when that happened, did you believe at any point in time that Wheeler could bounce back from such a huge play like that?
I mean, that's a great point, because like we said, like that's when most teams, 99% of teams, fall, because Grayson makes that big run, and then it snowballs, and it goes from an 8-point game to a 20-point game. You could ask Norcross about that.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Wheeler just responded, you know, so well with that 7-0 run. Was I surprised? I don't want to say I was necessarily surprised. You know, I thought Grayson would, end up winning the game. Would it be a close game? Of course. I didn't think they were just going to run away and win by, 15, 16 points. But how Wheeler responded, they closed the gap, and they got right back into it. But, you know, at the end of the day, free throws were so huge. Grayson was up one with about a minute 30 left. Ian Shefflin goes 0-for-2 from the foul line. That could have made a 3-point Grayson lead. And they just really struggled from the foul line in the fourth quarter. They went 5-for-11. And you look at Wheeler, they went 8-for-9 from the foul line in the fourth quarter. And that's a couple points that ended up deciding the game. And, you got to give all the credit in the world to Wheeler. Taking Grayson literally their best punch and bouncing back, it was super impressive.
What about the Westlake Collins Hill game? What was that game like? Westlake won that one by a wide margin, and I think if I remember right, they took a huge early lead on Collins Hill. What did Westlake have that Collins Hill just couldn't contend with?
Well, Westlake had Raven Johnson and Tania Latson, and Collins Hill didn't. So that was a big thing. I mean, Raven Johnson right out of the gate hit three threes in the first quarter. Got him off to a nice lead. Now Collins Hill closed to make it a 2-point game at the end of one, but Westlake just too experienced, just too good, too much of a team. And you know, it's hard at times to win state titles when you have a bunch of players that, you know, they're there for just one season. Now they can all be talented, but you're looking at a Collins Hill roster that had about 6 or 7 girls transfer in, and
yes,
you know, that talent's gonna get you so far. But Westlake, they've been in the trenches before. Outside of Latson, who transferred in this year, like that whole core, Turnage, Hooks, Johnson, Lydia Freeman, Olympia Chain, all those girls, had been growing up through the pipeline and had been, you know, scrapping and clawing together to win those first two state titles. And, you know, they're playing against a Collins Hill team that was constructed to beat them. So they knew they had the target on their back, but just having that chemistry and cohesion and knowing each other for multiple years, I think that really shined through when they were able to get the job done.
Well, I'm just glad Collins Hill got back to state prominence. It's been lacking because they really fell off the map when Angie Hembry left there as head coach and Maya Moore left as well. So I'm glad Collins Hill got back to the to prominence with that state championship, even though they did not win to Westlake. In your opinion, Kyle, what was the best game of the weekend? I know there's 16 to choose from. Which one really stood out?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there were some really good ones. I mean, Grayson and Wheeler's are a really good pick right there. I mean, Chattahoochee and Lanier went into overtime. That was a three-point game. But the one I got to go with, actually, maybe Buford girls beating Kell. I mean, Kell was undefeated going into the game. Buford, obviously, three straight state titles. They made it four this past week. But that was just back and forth, back and forth. Big runs, similar to the Grayson-Wheeler game. You know, one team goes ahead 10 points, and the other team comes back, and then they take an eight-point lead, and back and forth. And just when you thought Buford was about to ice it out, they were up about 7 points with maybe a minute and a half left. Crystal Henderson, a phenomenal freshman, just goes crazy. I think she finished with 26 points, and you know, it came down to a final shot at the buzzer, which was off the mark. But Kell is very resilient, very talented, all freshmen and sophomores. But Buford just found a way to win. Gene Durden, he always does it this time of year.
Yes.
And that was a fantastic game.
Daniel, were you there for the dunk contest? Was that yesterday?
So I missed it. I didn't get there until the third quarter of the Westlake Collins Hill matchup. Okay. So I missed the 6A finals because my son, who he runs for Monday's Mill, they had a track meet over at Drew High School, the North Clayton Eagles Invitational.
Okay.
So I was there for that one majority of the morning. So I missed the festivities that happened. I heard it was a great dunk contest. But I thought it was a great thing. This is good for high school basketball. I really like this.
Were people really getting into that dunk contest? Did you see it, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, people were pretty interested. I think they did a really nice job with BSN Sports and everybody who was a sponsor. They had the girls' three-point contest the day before, and that went, you know, quickly and smoothly as well. But the same dunk contest was really good. I mean, Jacquez Kirby. Kirby's going to Murray State from Jeff Davis High School out of Hazelhurst, down in South Georgia. He put on a show. It was a really close one. Just beat Al Kobe's, you know, super athletic Oliver Gerard in a great dunk off. But yeah, people really enjoyed it, and it was really nice, and it kind of transitioned from 6A into the 7A state championships.
Another player I want to ask you about was a player I saw, again, doing some work for SUV. Actually, I saw you at this game in early January down at the Gateway Center Arena, Walker Kessler from Woodward, and they beat Cross Creek. To be honest, I didn't even know Cross Creek still had athletics, but it's good to see Cross Creek get into that state titles. But Walker Kessler, he had about six blocks against North Clayton, and he really seemed to turn the inside into a no-go zone. Is he one of the best post players coming out of the state of Georgia?
Yeah, he definitely is. And just the scary thing is because the scary thing is he can have a flat-out bad game and still be dominant. I saw him in the Final Four. He did not play well at all. He about 0 of 6 for 3, missed badly on each shot attempt outside of about 10 feet. He was way off his game, and he still finished with about 21 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 blocks. And that just is a testament to how good, how skilled he is, and just how freaking tall and long. You just cannot keep him off the glass. And he didn't have a superstar game against Cross Creek, but same thing. He just kills you all throughout the game. It's not going to be, you know, big-time highlight plays, but he's just going to keep body-punching you and body-punching you and body-punching you. And he finished with 17 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 blocks, and 1 state championship ring. So it was a great way to end his career before going to North Carolina, an All-American.
Yeah,
and,
North Carolina really needs him right now, that's for sure. North Carolina really needs him. But you know, Woodward, you're talking about he had 17 points. Woodward had five players in double figures. I mean, that is just a really balanced team with Michael Whitmore, Will Richards, Ja'Cory Turner, and Emery Lanier, head coach Rob Lanier's son. He's going to Davidson. So, I mean, Woodward is probably one of the more balanced teams in this state.
And yeah, that's definitely right, because that was a team, you know, a lot of people in Class 4 said Sandy Creek or Woodward, and, you know, Woodward beat them 58-56, I want to say, in the Elite Eight, and that's, you know, everyone said that's your state championship right there, and everybody was pretty much correct because no one else could really challenge Woodward.
All right, well, like it or not, it's been kind of de rigueur to slam the GHSA for their choice of putting it in the Macon Centroplex. It seems like every year there's problems, from the problems with the baskets 4 years ago. Now, and we were talking about this off air a little bit, it was really cold there. And now, and I mean, it just seems like every year something goes wrong. And we really need like a really good palace for this tournament to take place, and it just seems like it's in Macon, and they just can't seem to find another solution.
Yeah, it was it's always rough, and you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but sometimes media members we just kind of get numb to the situation. We know we're going to Macon, we know it's not going to be necessarily ideal, it's not going to be a palace or anything great like that. It is what it is. Yes, it needs to be better. Like, you know, sitting on press row, I should not have my feet soaked because I'm sitting in puddles of water because the condensation and the ice underneath, it was bad. And, you know, especially the first day was really bad with players slipping all over the floor and everything. Now, there was a lot of rain that day, and I think that definitely played a big factor, and they weren't necessarily as prepared as they probably should have been. They just did not foresee the water being so bad, leaking into the gym, and you know, people tracking it in and walking on the court. But after that, the floor situation did get much better, so I'll give them credit for that. But yeah, it's just the conditions aren't ideal, and you know, it's really a shame, especially in 7A when you got Wheeler and Grace and all. You know, one of the all-time classic games. Would you look in the stands? It's maybe 65-70% filled. Mm-hmm. I would just love to see those championship games all the way packed out like they used to be at Georgia Tech.
Oh, I remember that.
I agree.
20, yes. Those
I agree 100%. After being down there. Yeah, I agree with that.
The old Thriller Dome. I would even say I've heard Georgia State's new Convocation Center being floated around. Actually, what I would rather do is put them at the new Buford City Arena. I think it would be great. I think that would be a great venue for them. But again, it's a lot of decisions made by people who are, quite frankly, in a higher pay grade than us. And another thing we were talking about is this idea of making like an all classification tournament. But what I suggested, and you know, I've been making the suggestion point, is take the eight winners and put them in another tournament. And I, you know, it just seems like it's such a great idea. But there are just so many factors that are involved in that, it'll probably never happen.
Yeah, that would be terrific. I mean, I'm telling you, players, parents, fans, coaches, everybody in the world would love to see something like that. But at the end of the day, it's just going to always come down to logistics. Do they have enough space? Do they have enough time on the calendar? Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned earlier, you know, travel ball coaches, they want their players. They want them. Once the season's over, it's time to get ready to get prepared for live periods and everything like that. So there's just sometimes not enough days in the month and time, you know, on these calendar years to get this stuff done. But in a perfect scenario, everybody would love that. I think that would draw tons and tons of people. Talk about real David versus Goliath matchups. I think we could see some history if we saw some of those teams given that huge opportunity. But sadly, I don't know if it'll ever come to fruition, but it would just be something fantastic for the state of Georgia.
It would be. Now, going into the off season, or the travel ball season, because as we all know, basketball never sleeps. What is the big story? What is the main story that you're going to be watching as we head into the off season?
Yeah, well, it changes all the time, but things like who are these late unsigned seniors? Those are some of the more fun things to keep an eye on. Who's still unsigned? Who's going to make that late decision? And another thing I like is who's improving their game, because you know, sometimes it's sad but true, but sometimes state championships are won in the summer months as far as transfers go.
Right.
The people moving teams, when you add four players from here and there, you know, you go from middling to, you know, top of the food chain. So that's always fun to be able to track all the rumors where kids are going and just again, just to see the development of, you know, players stepping up from maybe being an underclassman to now being an upperclassman to being that go-to guy. It's just always really fun to see the growth of some of these student athletes and really see their recruitment and just the, you know, the rest of their careers take off in the summer months.
All right, we're talking high school hoops, the Georgia State Finals with Kyle Sandy of Sandy Spiel here in the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. John Morgan, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. Daniel, do you have anything else you'd like to ask? Anything else you want to add?
You know, I want to go back to the Westlake girls. I've been down there 2 years in a row. And, of course, last year I went down there because my alma mater finally won a state championship in Tri-Cities. So that was fun to watch. And then I see Westlake and Hilda Hankerson and what they're doing. And I'm just going to say this, man. I don't see them losing the state title next year. I see them winning it again. They have three. They only have three seniors on that squad from this year. And I just think that the dominance that they have right now is just unprecedented. And I see Westlake actually going through next year as well. And probably they may run the table next year. They may go unbeaten throughout the entire regular season. But, you know, time will tell and we'll see.
Leon, do you have anything? All right. Well, Kyle, I think we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us here in the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. We'll check in with you as we get closer to the 2020-2021 high school season. I appreciate all you do to keep everyone informed of what's going on in Georgia high school hoops. I mean, you seemingly are everywhere. I don't know when you sleep, but I assume you're going to take this next week off. So get your rest, get over that cold, and come out strong when we roll around to October.
Hey, I appreciate it, you guys. Always have fun talking Georgia high school basketball. And you're right, it's time to go in my bat cave and go into hibernation.
Okay. Right on. All right, we'll talk
to you. And you do a great job with that website, too, Kyle. You guys are doing a tremendous job.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
All right, that was Kyle Sandy of Sandy Spiel, and he is the preeminent voice of Georgia high school basketball, talking state championships over at the Macon Centerplex. And like I said, it just seems very de rigueur, very easy to make fun or to slam Georgia GHSA for using that particular venue. Daniel, you were there. What did you think of it?
Of the entire
of the Macon Centerplex, of the arena
of the
itself.
Macon,
to make it central
black.
It's obvious to say we could find something better. I mean, that's easy. We could find something better, but as Kyle was saying, he said logistics. Right. I think let's be kind and say what he really meant: politics. The people in South Georgia do not like. They can't stand what they perceive as the Atlanta bias for the GHSA. That everything's got to be everything's got to be in Atlanta.
Everything's got to be in Atlanta.
The best facilities are in Atlanta. They don't like it. They would rather. And this, I'm sorry, Daniel. I don't mean to keep cutting you off, but we've gotten through this point before about, especially with football. They cannot stand that drive to Georgia State Stadium. They much would rather have a championship in their backyard that they could make. And there are some good facilities back there. Maybe nothing on par with what we have up here. But, you know, put it, they want a game in Valdosta State. They want, and I guess that's probably the best place to put one. Valdosta wants something there in South Georgia. And there is that Atlanta bias. So if the championships do get moved to Atlanta, even though we do have, as I said, we do have great facilities. I don't think a facility in Savannah could possibly compare, and certainly in Macon, although I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I would like to put it in Buford. I think Buford Arena, City Arena, would be a great place for it. But it just still goes into that Atlanta bias, and the people in South Georgia, they don't like it. They don't like driving 4 hours. They want to be there. And, of course, part of the problem with this is that the GHSA basketball finals are not available on Georgia Public Broadcasting. They've been streamed only, and you need a subscription to watch it. Now, sometimes the NFHS will give you that day-long free pass to watch. But it's just a lot of factors and a lot of politics are involved. And that's also why you're not going to see that 8-team tournament of champions idea that was being floated around, and as I said, I'm just going to keep harping on it, that I you know, first floated it on this particular podcast, and of course no one paid any bit of attention, but hey, what, that's that. You know, that's the other reason why that's not going to happen. It's logistics, which is just another fancy name for politics. It's, you know, who's going to do the broadcast. I mean, yes, it would be a goldmine to whoever wants to run with this, but, you know, the AAU squads, they want their players to come in. They're not going to give up that. They don't want to give up that extra week. You know, it's just a lot of things are going to prevent it from happening, even though, as Kyle said, it's just such a good idea. It has to happen.
You're right. And, you know, it's such a big difference between football and basketball. Mm-hmm. The football aspect I can get, and the only reason why I get that is because of the weather. It's hotter down south than it is up north when you go further north. So, I mean, we had it at Georgia State Stadium this year, and it was cold out there, man.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me that. I walked the sidelines for one of the games, Blessed Trinity in Oconee County. Yeah, it was cold. I mean, especially when that sun went down. And you're just playing a crapshoot.
When the sun went down, right?
Yeah, but it's...
Now, For basketball, my thing is this. If you want, I mean, and even for both sports, guys, I mean, if you want, because, listen, the Cineplex has been that steady hold for years, fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But switch the venue every 2, maybe 4 years or so. Or we know we can't switch it every year.
Yeah.
So switch it every 2 years or maybe every 4 years when you have the reclassification. Mm-hmm. 4 years we have it at Buford City.
Yeah.
4 years we have it at the Macon Coliseum, or even Valdosta State. Some of these colleges host those tournament championships every 4 years. And then
that's a good idea.
You know, you can solve this problem,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually appease to everybody, including the ones, because now what's going to happen is that there are probably some people complaining from the likes of Farrell High School, who just won two straight AA championships. They have to travel from Atlanta, which is close to Greenbrier Mall. That school's close to Greenbrier Mall, all the way down to Macon.
Well, I would pretty much...
So now you have a problem with that.
Yeah, I would pretty much have this tournament of champions in Macon. I mean, yeah, you want it in a central location.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Let's put it in Cochrane. Let's put it in Morris Gym in Cochrane. How about that?
In Cochrane, How about it?
Yeah,
it's closer.
It's a nice little
it's
intimate
right there,
setting.
Georgia, so.
Yeah, it's a nice little intimate setting. So, you know, but yeah, we there's got to be a better, because the reason why it was so cold is they got the ice rink underneath the Centroplex, and I think that's why it was so cold.
Mm-hmm.
So either you got to get the ice rink out of there, and you know, we just something needs to be done, because, like I said, it's just easy to make fun of the GHSA for it. And as much as we like the GHSA, I said this to Tommy Palmer once, the GHSA just can't seem to get out of its own way. We've seen this time and time again. They just can't seem to do something and have it go off without a hitch. Baseball's getting close. But then we had the issues with the rain and the tiebreakers. You know, they just can't seem to get out of their own way. And it's just one of those things where somebody's going to have to really take over and ride roughshod over this. And that's also going to ruffle a lot of feathers. All right, we are the last three guys to do a podcast. I'm John Morgan with Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Leon, I want to ask you this. You probably saw this yesterday. James Harden with the quadruple-double. Points, assists, rebounds. Turnovers.
Hey, but they got the win,
right?
So, and I believe I don't think they had Russell Westbrook in that game either.
Well, I don't think so, but
not at all. So, you know, he once again, when you see James Harden put up numbers like that, and unfortunately, the turnovers meant that he kind of put a little too much. You know, he's used to sharing that load,
right,
with Russ. But when he put the team on his back and led his team to victory, you know,
he was trying to do too much, is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Wait, guys, did they win that game? I thought they lost that game.
I think they won. I think they may have won the game. Oh, hold on. Mm. Uh-oh.
Let's check. Because I thought that score was 108-99, and whoever they played came out on like a 20-0 run on them.
Yeah, let's look back. I'm still.
It was Charlotte, wasn't it? I mean, that's what I remember. And while we talk that, and while we dig deep into our laptops trying to get that information.
Hold on. Daniel burst the bubble on that one. I thought they won the game. I am tripping. Excuse me about that, America.
There's another NBA story, a little they NBA sure story. And we'll talk about this as soon as Leon gets off of his trip.
But we're gonna, it was 108-99 Charlotte.
It was Charlotte, yeah.
They sure did.
Yeah.
No,
and Harden had the quadruple double, and he had 10 turnovers. And yeah. I think Charlotte started off on like a 20-0 run. Mm-hmm. And that's where they were done.
Yep. But again, it's just a matter of James Harden trying to do too much with Russell Westbrook out of the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely made a difference. And I'm still, you know, I like, you know, though I'm a Laker fan. Houston is a very fun team to watch. I mean, to watch James Harden jump center at the beginning of the game is classic. I mean, that's something you would never – even though James Harden is 6'5", but in NBA terms, that is like 5'8" if you're playing at the YMCA.
Yeah.
So, you know, but will the Houston Rockets style of play actually catapult them to an NBA Finals? I don't know because – you know, when it comes to rebounding, you know, if you don't rebound, you just don't win. And, you know, when your big guy is P.J. Tucker, it looks kind of weird.
Right. Another thing I saw from the NBA. I'm sorry, Daniel, you got something?
No, I said I agree. Okay. I agree with what he said.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Well, another thing I saw is that, again, we're coronavirus panic is sweeping the country, and the NBA sent out a memo warning teams that they may have to play games in front of empty arenas to, you know, just the essential staff would be present just to, in case this does outbreak gets any worse. I believe Italy is having all their soccer matches in empty stadiums, empty arenas, just for that purpose, although it's much worse in Italy than it is here, and they're saying it might get to that point. And LeBron James, in a statement, said, no, I am not going to play in an empty arena. I am here for my team first and for the fans second, and I will not play in an empty arena. And I was just wondering what Leon thought about that.
Yeah, that was a politically correct way of saying sue me.
Okay.
You know, he's not going to do it. You know, I mean, this coronavirus has scared the heck out of America. I'm talking about a state of emergency, I believe, in Washington. South by Southwest has been canceled.
That's the festival down in Austin, Texas, and I don't think Austin has any. I don't know if they have any cases down there. This is just a precaution.
Yeah, because we're talking about people coming in from all regions of the country.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
So that could possibly bring a problem. The pop star Ciara has canceled her concert due to coronavirus scares. I mean,
Russell Wilson must be happy about that.
Oh, man. So, you know, I think she's pregnant, too, again.
Okay.
So, she is.
Yeah. Yes. So, they're.
So, Alabama's going to offer him a quarterback scholarship for the class of 2050. Or, no, 2045 probably, or 44. Okay. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah. So, we're looking at, you know, LeBron's pretty much like, you know, he feeds off the energy of the crowd. If it's like that, then, you know, we're just not going to play. And, you know, maybe that, you know, has to be some type of mass quarantine, you know, that has to happen in order, you know, for fears to subside. But, yeah, it's getting, you know, it's getting interesting. I'm hoping it doesn't reach to, you know, epidemic proportions like we see in the movie Outbreak.
Yes. Yes. And I saw that about 2,800 people in New York City are under quarantine, and I'm going to be in New York not next week but the following week, which would be great. I could finally get a parking space.
I mean, have you considered canceling that trip, though?
If the reason why I'm going gets canceled, then I would probably do it. But as long as the reason why I'm going is still on, I'm going.
Right on.
And I'm going to hopefully try to get there like a little bit early on the day before, because I just found on the schedule that the Rangers are playing at home against Pittsburgh. So I'm going to see if I can get in a little bit earlier and go check that out down at MSG. But, yeah, I just thought it was very interesting to see LeBron make that statement about why he would refuse to play under those circumstances. Of course, we hope that it doesn't get that bad. And I personally, I mean, I'm part of the problem is I get all my news off of Twitter, so that might be one of my big issues right there. But it just seems that this virus Yes, 3% is the mortality rate, and that is high. But if you got to look at it, it's age grouped. It really, because it all averages out. It's like if you're over 80 years old, it's about 10%, and if you're under 50, it's less than 1%. So for all, and that's really the big issue. If you are elderly, you need to stay inside. You need to keep away. Like my parents, they're both elderly, and I'm just hoping that they do, in fact, stay inside and not catch this thing, because that might, you know, you don't want to consider that. So it is getting bad. We wish everyone who is affected recovers, but it's just interesting to see how everybody reacts to this. And of course, the world of sports is no different. They're trying to minimize, they're trying to err on the side of caution. And we see this a lot. We've seen it before with when it starts raining, everything gets canceled. Now it's, well, it used to be when it snows, everything gets canceled. Now it's when it's raining, everything gets canceled. Everyone's just erring on the side of caution, erring in terms of public safety. And that's really what we're talking about here. But I just think that was interesting that LeBron said that he would not do that. But let's play devil's advocate here, Leon. If, say it does happen, and say the Lakers are, let's say it happens during the playoffs, would LeBron come in for a playoff game that would be forced to be played in front of an empty arena?
I'm thinking that he will. I believe that he, you know, I'm kind of 49-51 on this one, because a part of me believes that he will stand up.
Mm-hmm.
He will stand on his word and state that, hey, this is going to be a little awkward. I'm not going to do it. And that's going to cause a lot of, you guys were just discussing, you know, the politics
mm-hmm.
of high school sports.
Right.
And that's a volume in of itself.
Yes.
Well, imagine the politics of professional playoff sports when you have a lot of advertisers who have prepaid for their spots on those channels just for the game to be canceled.
Well, here's what I would do. I talked to Apple. How many seats are in Staples Center?
Over 25,000?
I would go to Apple, get 25,000 tablets, put one tablet in each seat, and have it so you FaceTime, right? Each season ticket holder FaceTimes to a particular tablet, so when you look at the seat, the seat holder's there, and he could look and he could see the game, and all you would see is a face, and of course they pipe in crowd noise.
25,000 times $500.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah,
we're talking at least 25,000. Staples Center might be about 30K times $500.
So if you can't attend physically, you can attend virtually.
It may have to get to that point, you know. But I say it's like, you know, you can't hide from anything that's in the air.
No, all you can do is be careful in terms of wash your hands with antibacterial soap.
Pretty much.
And that's really about the only thing. That really is the only thing you can do.
Right.
And I think it's amazing that just this simple piece of advice is flummoxing millions and millions of people.
Yeah. It's getting interesting, you know. But, you know, hey, you know, it's hopefully this storm will pass
mm-hmm.
and everything will be back to normal, you know. Well, you know, on a lighter note,
right.
America. There's a lot of March Madness going on right about
now. Oh, there's tons of it, Leon. That's a great segue. And of course, the first hammer got dropped yesterday.
On my hometown,
San Diego State.
Oh my goodness!
Losing to
Utah
State, who was actually, according to Joe Lunardi, considered the last four out, the first four out.
Well,
they were actually on the bubble. They were the first four out, and now they've stolen a bid from someone. And San Diego State will probably be knocked down to a two seed. Now they were once on the one line, and now they'll be a two.
Yeah,
maybe a three.
Yeah,
it depends on how the tournament goes.
And I believe this happened on the night that we retired Kawhi Leonard's jersey. It's the first jersey ever to be retired from a single. You know,
well, would they do it at a conference tournament though? I thought they would do that more as a home game.
They retired Kawhi's jersey last week, I think.
They did it before the tournament final.
Right.
It was at the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas.
You know, this is just a testament of the talent or lack thereof that came, you know. But, you know, let's see, for the basketball center, you know, we had a great point guard by the name of Tony Gwynn that he ended up, you know, going to, play baseball and became a baseball legend.
Yeah,
you know,
took a different route.
Yeah, he safe to say he made the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sangre State, we have put out, you know, Steven Strasburg, you know, Sangre State alum.
Mm-hmm.
He now plays for Washington Nationals. This is huge, you know, for me personally. Cause this is the first time that my hometown university has been relevant in basketball since Kawhi Leonard. I mean, I remember watching, back in 2010, when I heard Sangre State being mentioned in the same sentence as UConn basketball.
Right.
You know, he's like, Scott Van Pelt was like, boy, Sangre State is a beast. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to pinch myself like – really? We are. We're a powerhouse. You know, then Kawhi left and we went right back to being Sangre State again. But dude, here we are again. I think we could possibly take it all. Hopefully this loss to you that we suffered at the hands of Utah State was just a glitch in the matrix.
Well, like Daniel said, it'll push you down to a 2-seed.
I can live with that.
Yeah, you could, because being a 2-seed is not that bad.
No.
It means is you won't get challenged until the Western Conference Final. Instead of playing a 4-seed in the semis, you play a 3.
I'm completely comfortable with that.
Yes.
You know, as long as my guys are relevant, and just to hear Sangre State possibly being mentioned in the Final Four is huge. Possibly, you know, but, you know, based on what happened thus far, March Madness has already started. The upsets are coming. They're looming on the horizon. I just hope that it misses my guys.
And as Leon, as one of you guys said, San Diego, Utah State steals a bid, probably from the Big Ten. Because I was hearing reports that the Big Ten was getting 8-9 teams in.
Oh, bubbles have been bursted.
If I'm the 9th squad on that Big Ten, I'm looking at this upcoming conference tournament and saying, okay, we got to make a run here to get back on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, they definitely stole a bid from probably a Big Ten school, like you said, John. And the team I might be looking at is Indiana. I think Indiana really has to really do some things to impress the committee, even though Lenardi has them at the last four in.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have to do some work. I don't think they have to necessarily win the tournament, but they do have to impress the committee right now.
They got
to
get at least.
If they lose a game, if they're one and done, I don't think they're in.
Yeah, they got to at least get to the semis. They got to at least get to the semis.
They have to get to Saturday.
Have to get to next Saturday if anybody wants to even look at them. And that's going to be tough to do, seeing that you have the likes of Maryland and Ohio State playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois stepped it up pretty well. Michigan State, you just never know what you're going to get out of them.
Michigan took a bad loss.
They're going to go as far as Cassius Winston takes them, right?
Right.
So, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, with them. I'm going to tell you something, guys. If we ain't never seen a college basketball season like this before.
Oh, no.
This has been just outrageous just to see what has happened. At first, it looked like Baylor was the team that, you know, everybody was on. They were on a 19-game winning streak at one point. Kansas ended it, I believe it was last week or a week and a half ago. And then they've lost 3 out of their last 5 games. And Kansas now wins the conference championship outright. And they were challenged last night as well by Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been one of those seasons where we just don't know what's going to happen. And these conference tournaments are going to really, really tell the story, just the story. And also congratulations to the Belmont Bruins. They won their conference tournament as well. So they'll be
the second team to have punched their bid behind Utah State.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the fact that – do you believe that Michigan's bubble has been burst with their loss to Maryland? You know, because they're already ranked number 25, and they took a real bad L to a, you know, a fairly like
Michigan or Michigan State.
Michigan Wolverines.
The Wolverines.
Yes, they're ranked number 25, and they just took a.
Well, if they're ranked 25, they're in. It doesn't matter how they fall down. It doesn't matter how far they're going to fall. They'll probably fall to. They'll be in the receiving votes category. I mean, if you're in the receiving votes category, you are more than likely in.
They just lost though.
Well, like, and they also have the conference tournament coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of teams that need to that have to do really well in that conference tournament. I mean, look at the SEC: South Carolina, Alabama. They just both took bad losses. Now they need to redeem themselves in the conference tournament. So that conference tournament can change everything. Look at the ACC. Look at North Carolina. They go into that conference tournament as a 14 seed. This might be the worst showing for North Carolina ever.
Damn.
It is since the Brian Doherty era.
Right, right.
And
they could have been 15, but they could have been 15 at the bottom, but Georgia Tech decided, you know what, we're going to take a self-imposed penalty so you don't kneecap us in scholarships for the coming years.
Yeah, you got to think about the future. Right. Right. Yeah, I think like a chess player.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you got to think about, as much as you want to get into that tournament, you got to think about not handicapping yourself too severely for the next couple of years. And that's basically what Josh Pastner
did. You talk about the ACC guys. They are so down this year. We're used to seeing them having eight teams in the tournament, eight, nine teams. They're going to only have – there are four legit teams that are going to go to the tournament, maybe five.
We're lucky. Yeah, they're going to be lucky to get five. They're not going to get six. I think the Big Ten is going to absorb a lot of the teams that would normally have come from the ACC. The SEC is only probably going to get four. Pac-12 will probably get four or five. And you're probably going to get the Conference USA, the American Conference. They'll probably pick up one more to the ones that they normally get. And then, of course, all the other conferences will just get their customary conference tournament champion, and that's kind of it. And, of course, there's the Midwest that we know is going to get to, or the Mountain West that we know is going to get to.
Right, because Zaga doesn't win the West Coast Conference, they're going to get too big.
Yes.
I mean, what went wrong with North Carolina this year? I mean, they 13 and 18, I mean, they have a below 500 record. I mean, Duke is kind of, you know, Duke isn't in any
great shape either. They lost three games straight on the road.
Yeah, they're winning 80% of their games, but we expect a little more.
Yes.
Out of the Blue Devils.
Yes, and of course, you know, is that because they lost Zion? Well, honestly, I think they knew they were going to lose Zion.
Yeah.
That was foretold. That was in the stars. But you know, Duke just can't seem to get it together. They're going to be in, but they're not going to be a high seed. They'll be more along the lines of a five or a six, possibly.
Yeah.
It would surprise me if Duke's in the top four. I don't think they're going to be.
Are you predicting our
last? Well, Duke is actually listed as a top two seed. They are actually on the two line, and if they do what they need to do in the ACC tournament, and of course Florida State's the number one seed because they won the regular season outright.
Right.
But if they do what they need to do, and I've been on record to say if Florida State wins, they've won the regular season. If they win the conference tournament, they're a one seed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you must be happy about that.
Right, exactly. And another team that nobody is talking about is Dayton.
Dayton?
They probably got the best big man in the country, Obi Toppin, and nobody's really talking about them, but that's because they're in the Atlantic. They're in the Atlantic 10, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's where they are.
Yeah, they're going to take that. They're probably going to win that conference tournament. They won the regular season. They're ranked third in the country. Yes, that's right. Dayton is ranked three in college basketball, and right now they're on the inside. They're right now got the inside track for a number one seed.
So you think Dayton would get that? Dayton would
flyer.
Yeah, Dayton would get that one seed that San Diego State coughed up last night.
Possibly, and Dayton has completely dominated their conference. Completely, utter domination. So they have a lot of great momentum coming into March. So we could see a lot of good things happening. As far as their big man is concerned. You know, I wonder if his skill set will translate in today's NBA. Because we've seen with, you know, the Taco Fall situation. I mean, he's playing for Boston, but he's not really playing for Boston.
Yes.
As of right now. He might be a year away or whatnot, but, you know, they're looking for, you know, I mean, with Andre Drummond, for example, being traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers out of Detroit, how Detroit kind of gave up on him like that, you know, yeah. It's kind of telling. So good things can still happen, though.
Yep, we are the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgo with Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton calling in. We were discussing Georgia high school basketball. Now we turned our discussion to the NBA, now switching around into March Madness, the NCAA tournament. First two rounds, March 19th and 20th. Love the first two rounds. Going to be off for my main job those two rounds, but unfortunately Friday I'll be on the road, and actually both those days I'll be away, although maybe on that Thursday I might be in my hotel room just vegging out and watching basketball. Daniel, will they let you watch the tournament games at Georgia State? Will you be able? Well, if Georgia State's playing, yes, of course, but you know, are you going to sneak a TV in and catch some things?
Oh! Listen, I don't think you guys know this, but at my job, I normally tell my clients, because I do IT support for Georgia State University.
Yes.
I tell my clients that around this time, those Thursdays and Fridays, listen, if you have anything that you need fixed, it can be fixed between 8 and 12, but do not. Everything else can be done remotely.
Right.
Because I have three monitors. I actually have four monitors in my office.
That's good.
Three of them and all four of them will have four games.
Yep.
It's going on. Well, I had my laptop on just in case somebody has any questions. I can do what's called a remote session with them and remote the machine to do what I need to do.
Okay.
So they know this, and I give the spiel, and everybody laughs about it and all of that stuff because they love me up there. So, yeah. You know, it is what it is. But those Thursday and Friday games, those are the best 2 days in the NCAA tournament.
Without question. I would argue those 2 days might be the best 2 days in sports.
Yeah,
I mean, you put the Super Bowl, the college football championship, and those 2 days. Those are the best 4 days in all of sports. And the ironic thing is I work at a CBS subcontractor, so if I was working, I would, you know, watch. I would have whatever CBS has got on through the monitors, but alas, I am not working. I'll be on vacation in New York that day, so I kind of messed myself up by that respect. So, but yeah,
right.
I'll probably be in the hotel room at least for a little bit watching some of those games. But yeah, I would argue that those 4 days are the best 4 days in sports. I would also put maybe the All-Star game on there if I need something else. The MLB All-Star game. And I'm talking about a day. You know, you can't count on a game 7 of a World Series every year. You can't count on game 7 of a finals, either Stanley Cup, NBA, every year. I'm talking about things you can count on year in, year out. Those things
year
you
out,
can count
yeah.
on. That is what I'm talking about. Like the Sunday of the Masters. You know you're going to get that each calendar year.
Yep.
So I would put that in there as well. Maybe the Indianapolis 500, but I'm not 100% sure about that. If you go that route, you'd have to put Daytona 500 over it, but I'm not 100% sure.
Daytona 500 would be bigger.
I'm not 100% sure I want to elevate it to that status just yet. But I'll put those five. You know, the first 2 days of the tournament, the All-Star game, Super Bowl, and college football championship. Those are my five greatest days in all of sports. So, and yeah, I would, because once you get to it, the championship game is kind of like an afterthought, and you're really too spent from everything that's gone on beforehand to really enjoy it. But that's just the way I feel. And so we are, we got about six minutes left here on the last three guys to do a podcast, trying to talk about some other things. Leon, is there anything you wanna add to the table?
Well, I'm looking at the NBA right now, and I'm already getting my bracket ready for the NBA for the NBA finals. I've been focusing, I believe it's a foregone conclusion based on what we've witnessed this weekend with the Lakers, that I believe, you know, 60% because they're my team, 40% based on analysis. So I'm wondering what the heart versus logic on this one, heart over logic. But I believe that the Lakers will represent the Western Conference in the NBA Finals this year. And I feel that we need to hurry up and get it in before Golden State comes back next year because they're coming back pretty strong.
Right.
But I believe we'll be okay. But the real – I think the real – the East, picking the East is going to be interesting. You know, because we look at our – the top of the – Look at the top of the food chain in the Eastern Conference is Milwaukee.
Right.
Milwaukee, to me, reminds me of a 2006 Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron, Giannis. Mm-hmm. You know, but then they may be a little better than the Cavaliers because the Cavaliers didn't have a Middleton. But based on the Bucks' playing style, I don't believe that they will represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals here. I believe that we'll see something similar to what happened last year with the Bucks. Well, they will be bounced out in the second round, and I believe it will happen at the hands of Miami. The winner of the Miami and Philadelphia, if Philadelphia finishes at the fifth seed, because I believe that Miami can beat Philadelphia based on their lineup. They understand their lineup boasts of Jimmy Butler, defensive powerhouse of a player. Bam Adebayo, did I pronounce his name right?
It's close enough.
Okay, cool. Defensive guy. Jay Crowder, defensive guy. Andre Iguodala, defensive gentleman who's coming off the bench. Defensive veteran. Former NBA Finals MVP. I believe that they have the dogs to go off and tackle the Milwaukee Bucks, in which later on they will more than likely face off against the winner of the Toronto and Boston series, and I feel that the winner of that series between Toronto and Boston will represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals, and I believe it just may be Boston, and we'll see a Boston Celtics and LA Lakers NBA Finals again. If I'm wrong, it will be Toronto all over again, but I believe that it's going to be either Toronto or Boston represent the Eastern Conference, with my dark horse team being Miami, because only because I believe that offense does look pretty, but defense gets the job done.
Right.
And Miami has a lot of it. But at the end of the day, I believe my first choice would be Boston, my second choice would be Toronto, and my third choice, my distant third choice would be Miami.
What do you think of the Nets parting ways with Kenny Atkinson?
It's something more to the story.
Think so?
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. The Nets are, you know,
they're in good position. They're good, probably in. Right now they're fighting with Orlando for that seventh and eighth spot.
It doesn't make sense, does it? For you to have a regime change right in the thick of things. There's something that's going on between probably him and the players.
Okay.
You know, maybe he wasn't getting along with a core player. It just doesn't make sense. Like I said, they're not telling the whole story. But maybe the coach got into it with the front office, or it may be coach front office or coach and player conflict. But there's definitely a conflict. You don't make changes like this abruptly. Usually, people wait to the end of the season to make a change like this. You know, the last time we've seen something as abrupt as this, where teams are jockeying for playoff position, was with the David Blatt firing during 2015 season in midseason,
right?
You know, after the Cavaliers come off NBA Finals, with they lost to Golden State in 2015. So it's during the 2016 season, the year that the Cavaliers came back 3-1 against Golden State, there was actually a coaching change that year, midseason. I guess LeBron was like, "Yeah, I just don't trust this guy's basketball IQ. We didn't get him out there, take him back to Israel."
But. LeBron is not shy about expressing his displeasure for coaches.
Yeah,
if the occasion arises.
But it had to have been front office and coach, because I can't see anybody on the Brooklyn Nets roster having enough juice to get the coach fired at this point. Mm-hmm. Kyrie is hurt. Kevin Durant is, you know, he's hurt as well. So they pretty much, you know, it had to have been a front office decision.
All right. Well, you heard from Leon Brown about that. I want to talk just for 60 seconds about that dumpster fire that is the New York Knicks. They have proved once again that that even though if your team is at the bottom of the NBA, tied for the least wins in the Eastern Conference with Atlanta and Cleveland, the last thing you want to do is anger your core supporters. Basically, Spike Lee was turned away from a Knicks game a few days ago, director, largely because, well, the official reason was because he was trying to use the VIP player media entrance to get into the game, get to his customary seats, and the security officials turned him away. Now, this is another example of Jimmy Dolan, you know, the CEO of the Knicks, antagonizing a name that has been long associated with the team. Of course, last year was that big brouhaha involving Charles Oakley, where the Oakman was arrested for trespassing because, again, same issue, and that led to a divorce between the Knicks and one of their bigger name supporters. Again, if you're the Knicks, you just cannot afford to do this. And, you know, regardless of whether or not Spike was right or wrong in trying to use the media entrance. I mean, yeah, he is Spike. I don't know if you want him to go through Concourse C to get in along with everybody else, although I think that he would probably, you know, be pretty much, they would probably leave him alone after all. You know, you walk down the street, oh, it's Spike Lee. Okay, you know, you just move on. But again, this is one of those decisions that is in the emerging fallout from it. It's not that Mr. Dolan apologized to Spike Lee. No, he just basically got the back of his security guys and just, you know, like I said, antagonized one of your only true fans left. And of course, in New York, everyone wants Mr. Dolan to sell the franchise. They think he is a cancer on this team, and he is the reason why the Knicks haven't been doing anything in the last 10 years. Same kind of situation, I guess you would call in Cleveland with Jimmy Haslam, NFL. It's really the ownership that is the big problem behind the Knicks. No free agent wants to go there. But again, it's just another situation where Mr. Dolan has failed PR 101.
John,
Spike Lee. You know what's funny about that, John?
What?
I think Spike's biggest problem with this is that he wasn't informed.
Oh, okay.
Like it just happened with it. Like nobody sent him. I mean, he is one of your biggest supporters, whether you suck or not.
Right.
And he's always going to be there. And I think that was one of his big concerns and one of his big problems. Like if you would have came out and told me instead of treating me like I'm just like a number one, a regular fan, number two, like I'm somebody that's a thief or something like that. Like I've done something wrong, but you've allowed me to do this. And that's where I think his whole issue with this came from. And, you know, and I agree with you, John. I think that was a great success that you did because the Knicks just have to do better.
Yeah.
Their management is just from top to bottom. And it's showing out on the playing field too, because that team is just as bad as it gets. So, you know, I just, I agree with you completely on that.
And he shells out a lot, as Leon just mentioned to me, he just shells out a lot of money on season tickets, too.
Exactly.
And Leon also just showed me that the Lakers defeated the Clippers by 9 points in the Battle of L.A.
But the fact that Spike Lee has given your company over $10 million of his hard-earned money over the past 30 years.
Exactly.
You know, I'm talking about Spike Lee was front and center on many Indiana Pacers, New York Knicks battles during the 90s when – I'm talking about
– he and Reggie Miller.
Yes. Legendary.
Yep.
I mean, he has been – I mean, Spike is like to the New York Knicks what Jack Nicholson is to the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just pretty much like a staple in that, you know.
Right.
And I'm talking about – and the Knicks suck right now, and Spike is still there.
He's still there. Yeah, you don't want to antagonize the one thing you've got going for you.
Oh, man.
And to do it so clumsily. I think that's the part of the story that appeals to me, just how haphazard and clumsy this was done, which is just representative of everything that Mr. Dolan does in charge of New York. It's just done haphazardly, done clumsily, with no foresight as to what the repercussions are
going to
be.
It's like going to your local liquor store and purchasing $800 worth of liquor, and the guy has the nerve to charge you for some ice.
or even worse, you present your ID, but the guy says, "Hey, this is fake," and doesn't charge and keeps the money, but doesn't give you the liquor.
Oh my goodness!
All right, Daniel, what do you got?
All right, so guys, of course, what we love to talk about in football is how hot the off season would be. Yeah, off season hot topics.
But the hot stove.
It's crazy because, yeah, it's like a hot stove. But the craziest thing in the offseason that has happened with football is the broadcasting. And for the second straight week, I'm about to mention something that has to do with broadcasting.
I know where you're going.
The reported news from the New York Post is that ESPN plans to attempt to acquire the great Al Michaels from NBC Sports for Monday Night Football.
Wow.
And but they would like, the reason why is because they would like for Peyton Manning to team up with ESPN and whatnot. Now, the funny part about this is that, remember last week I reported that Tony Romo
right.
had signed a 10-year deal to remain, a 10-year, $180 million deal to remain with CBS?
Mm-hmm.
This was reported last week. Now, the funny part about that is that he got that deal because Peyton Manning, they was actually after Peyton Manning first.
Yes.
And that didn't work out. So he got $18 million a year off of that. So, I mean, listen, Tony Romo is one of the best in the business.
Mm-hmm.
But for ESPN, who, of course, if you guys don't know, Joe Tessitore, Booger McFarlane,
they were the
Monday Night Football cast this year. So they're trying to move.
Well,
they're trying to move on.
Yeah, like I said last week, my big problem with Joe Tessitore is his rating, is his stature took a big hit when he agreed to do Holy Moly. You know, that's my thing. I can't take him seriously now.
Oh man!
And of course, right. and of course, with Al Michaels, you remember a couple years ago when Al Michaels essentially got traded to NBC from ABC, and he got traded for a rabbit.
Exactly. And,
yes.
And the thing about that is, I mean, listen, I don't blame ESPN for it.
Yeah.
Because when you had Al Michaels on your team, Monday Night Football was an Emmy winning production.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame them for going after it.
No, I don't.
It's just
I don't
funny
either.
That this is such a big term, and of course, Leon, they were also after Phillip Rivers too.
Oh,
but
man.
Phillip Rivers plans to play next season.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have to wait for the March 14th free agency camp to open up.
Yeah, this is what I'm gonna say about between Phil and Peyton. I don't know if. And I'm not trying to be – because I'm still a Phillip Rivers guy.
Yes.
I'm just a Charter fan. I just want my team to do well. So, mm-hmm. you know, I still believe that just because Phillip Rivers has the paper – he has the numbers to get in the Hall of Fame, but he doesn't have the letters.
Right.
And the W's and L's. It just doesn't match up.
Yeah.
But my point on this is, do you guys – Tony Romo has the personality.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think Phil has the personality. But when you look at Peyton Manning, you think Peyton has the personality –
he could be the next John Gruden.
Yeah,
you think so?
I mean, well,
Peyton's just me personally, because he can break it down better than anybody I've ever seen in football.
Well, Peyton's got the great demeanor, which I think was obtained by acting classes. You know, if he can get that aw shucks pitchman style going, yeah, he'd be pretty good. But I got a couple points. Number one, you said they want Al Michaels on Monday Night Football. The problem with that is Sunday Night Football is a more premier package. Monday Night Football will only get premiere as if they can get first pick of the games. Right now, Sunday Night Football gets the first pick. I don't know where Monday Night Football
sure.
falls in that, but Sunday Night Football gets first dibs. And as long as Sunday Night Football gets first dibs, they will continue and will remain the premier football game week in, week out. Monday Night Football is now at best number two, maybe number three. And secondly, when I said that Al Michaels was traded for a rabbit, what I mean was ABC traded Al Michaels for the rights to a cartoon character that Walt Disney created, but the rights was still stuck in Universal, and that was a cartoon rabbit. So when I say that Al Michaels was traded for a rabbit, I don't mean literally. That's what I meant for. He was traded for intellectual property that happened to be a rabbit. So that's what I mean by that.
Well, I'm talking about leave it to John. Wow. John is what you call an information junkie.
Well, like I said, that's just funny to say for Al Michaels, as great as he is, Miracle on Ice, all those great moments, and he got traded.
He's the greatest commentator of all time.
Yeah, and he got traded for a rabbit.
He's the greatest football commentator of all time without question.
Right,
but he
got traded for a rabbit. You know, that's... Yeah, you know, that's one of those things that is just it's a hilarious postscript on his career. You know, everything that's happened, but the craziest thing that happened to him, he got traded for a rabbit. You know,
for a rabbit.
Yes.
I mean, the irony is just ridiculous.
Well, on that ironic note, we'll wrap up this edition of the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. I'm John Morgan with Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown. Tomorrow we'll, or next week we'll be on the air as the selections are being announced. And we'll go into brackets. We'll do a heavy, heavy, deep dive of bracketology next week. I hope you can join us for that one. For our guest, Kyle Sandy, talked about all things Georgia High School Hoops. Thank you as well. And thank you, the listener, for tuning in and downloading our podcast. We appreciate all your great support. We'll see you in 7 days. This is the Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast.